This is the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast, and I'm your host, Graham Richmond. Today, we're going to talk about one of the thornier issues in the world of business school admissions, and that is paying for school. So often, our focus is really about like getting in to the very best schools that I feel like some of our listeners, you know who you are, may not think a lot about financing the MBA, and or at least the financing piece takes a bit of a backseat while you're focused on trying to get in to school. And so, obviously, I want to talk about this issue. And since I am by no means an expert on financial aid, you know, scholarships, student loans, and everything that goes into funding, you know, business education, I've invited two guests onto the podcast today. So first off, we have Nikhil Agarwal from Leverage. Welcome to the show, Nikhil.
Thank you.
So Nikhil, I'll just give our listeners, I know some of them may have heard you before as a guest on the show, but I just wanted to remind them that you are currently a second year student at HBS. You're graduating this spring and you did your undergrad at U Illinois Urbana-Champaign. You actually have a background in aerospace engineering, worked for Boeing for 6 years, and you started Leverage as you kind of got going at HBS. So that's Nikhil. The other guest that I've invited to the show is Pritish Nair from Prodigy Finance. And Pritish, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
So Pritish, just again, so that our listeners have a little bit of background, you know, you work at Prodigy Finance, you do biz dev for Prodigy. Prior to doing fintech, you actually worked on the admissions team over at the Indian School of Business, the ISB, handling outreach for the flagship MBA program there. And it sounds like you're a design graduate from Raffles University, and so have a bit of a background and passion for art and some other areas too. And currently, I guess in your current role, basically you're, you know, involved in helping folks finance their masters abroad. So again, thanks so much to both of you for joining. I want to dive in. We have some questions about paying for business school. And Nikhil, I want to turn to you first and just ask a very simple question, or what I hope is a simple question, about what does it typically cost to get an MBA from a top program? Ballpark figure here.
Yeah, that's I would say that's sometimes not as simple a question as you think. You can go to most of their top MBA websites and you can see, you know, they'll have annual tuition between 70 and 80K. Living expenses, including rent, is usually around 30,000. That being said, my rent alone is $2,600 per month. That puts you above $30,000 just for rent.
Right.
Actual living expenses, once accounting for, you know, the extra traveling you typically do in business school, the extra active social life, I'd suspect is closer to $50K. Mm-hmm. And you can add in another $10K of sort of one-time expenses, like moving expenses or a laptop you might need, things like that. All in, $250K over the 2 years is probably not too far from what you can expect to spend. And then some people like to add in sort of lost wages, especially if they're coming from high-paying careers, that can make a difference to sort of the overall perspective they have on the cost of the MBA.
So it's an expensive endeavor, clearly. And I think, yeah, obviously it depends where, you know, where your business school is too, I guess, because the cost of living where you are in, you know, Boston may be higher than, you know, if someone's at like, you know, Cornell in Ithaca or something. But yeah, so it's an expensive endeavor. Pritish, I want to turn to you and ask, like, how do students typically pay for it? I mean, you know, Nikhil just gave us an outline of like what it's going to cost, and there's several pieces to that, but how do people normally pay for this?
Sure. I think that's a good question. And I believe that, you know, actively over the past few years, whether it's master's, an MBA, or if it's an MS in STEM, students are increasingly, you know, taking the due diligence and doing the research on what are the different ways of funding their education. And the goal here is to basically, you know, reduce the COA that Nikhil just mentioned. It's quite an expensive affair. So they could go about it in a couple of ways. So the first thing is personal savings. I believe an ideal MBA candidate would have had some of this money saved up. So that would become your option one. You have a lot of scholarships, company endowments, and government bodies giving free money, basically, in many ways. And there's nothing better than free money, because a scholarship is given to someone that's super deserving. And if you do factor that into the COA, you substantially reduce your total cost of attendance. So I would say the second way is probably one of the most important one. And some of these are even given as close to your university starting. So I recommend everyone listening to this podcast, you know, go in. There's a lot of resources online that can help you scout for all of these endowments, scholarships, and government waivers, depending on the geography you come from. Then you have a third mode, which is called employer sponsorship. If you have a contract with a company and they really want to retain you once again. So while this might not be applicable to everyone, it is an interesting route to do. And then you have something called soft loans, which is point number four, which is family or relative support. So the understanding is that they lend you this money, you're not going to incur interest on it, and it really helps you with your total debt burden because you're not taking that debt. And the last thing is your student loans. And what we have seen at 12 years at Prodigy is students really compile a lot of these combinations, 3 to 5 of these combinations, along with the student loan, and try taking as less debt as possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess, yeah, it really is a personal thing. I mean, some people have savings, some don't. Some people have parents who want to bankroll their their education. But it, yeah, it does sound like for everyone listening, you know, you're going to use a mix of these different resources to pay. And actually, one of the things you mentioned, Pritish, that I want to underline is that I think a lot of people think of scholarship dollars as coming from the school that they're ultimately going to attend, right? So a school might admit you and say, by the way, you know, you've got a $20,000 scholarship or whatever. But you correctly point out that there are other scholarships out there. And I think, Nikhil, when we had you on an episode earlier, you had mentioned this too, that there are other ways to get scholarship dollars from foundations or different resources out there. So great advice to do due diligence on that front. I want to ask another question that is, you know, related to all this, and that is, how much does someone typically borrow for business school? Or, you know, better yet, like, what's the average loan amount that Leverage or, you know, or Prodigy is giving out? So Nikhil, do you want to speak to that first? And then we'll turn to Pritish and ask, because I know you guys are, the numbers may not be the same for the two of you.
Yeah, for us, it's been pretty consistent on, you know, for domestic students, we've seen about $63,000 over the 2 years on average. Sorry, $63,000 per year, amounting to a total of a little bit over 100K on graduation.
Okay. And Pritish, what's the number look like on your end?
I think it's slightly higher. And right, like you rightly mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, it depends on geography. So I would say the ballpark figure is close to $75,000 to $95,000 per year. I believe we're talking about top business school, so it should be roughly around $170,000, $175,000 for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and that's a good point, because Prodigy is dealing with a lot of, yeah, folks around the world, usually heading somewhere out of country to get their degree. So yeah, there would be a lot of variance there. Nikhil, what's the typical interest rate on this borrowing? And what are the mechanics for payback? Like, I think that I'm dated because I went to business school a really long time ago, but I seem to recall that, you know, you borrow the money and you're not really, you don't pay anything until like a few months after graduation, maybe it's even 6 months or so. What are the mechanics of it, and what's the usual kind of interest rate for you guys?
Yeah, great question. I think the answer is really that it depends in terms of the interest rate. A lot of it depends on the borrower's credit profile and also what the market environment is. For example, last year, a good benchmark to look at is the government rates, and those were 6.08% for the first $20,000 you needed, 7.08% for anything above that, plus origination fee of around 4%. So it was quite expensive compared to most of our members were getting rates right around 5% and didn't have any origination fee. If we convert that to dollars, that can amount to close to $30,000 for the 2 years worth of loans in savings compared to the federal loans. So there's, you know, and this changes year to year depending on the interest rate environment. And the exact rate a particular student would get is really dependent on their credit profile, so it can change. In terms of the payback mechanics, it's exactly like you mentioned. There's a lot of flexibility. There are several options that students have, but most students do choose the option where they make no payments while they're in school, And 6 months after graduation, that's when they start making payments. And over 7 to 10 years, they pay off the loan.
Okay. So that makes sense. Really helpful. Pritish, what about for you guys? Any ballpark kind of what you've seen in terms of interest rates or and is there any difference in terms of what Nikhil just described for your clients?
Sure. I think there is a slight difference, and Nikhil pointed out a few facets, but I think this is a very important question. I think the way I would probably answer it is, at least for an international student, because it's completely different, the way we do it at Prodigy is you have two rates, right? Every loan has two rates. One is your fixed rate, anywhere between 5 to 8.5%, which stays constant throughout the year and the tenure of the loan. And then you have a variable base rate depending on the currency you borrow in. So if you were going for an MBA school in the US, the current variable base rate, which is the USD LIBOR, I believe is 1.3% as of 1st of May. And if you were going for an MBA school in Europe, the Euribor is on a minus, so there would be no variable. So if you looked at that fixed margin of 5 to 8.5%, let's say I applied for a school in the United States and I got a 7%, my effective rate of interest would be 7 plus 1.3%, which is 8.3% for an MBA school in the US as of today. But if I went to a similar school, a top-ranked similar school in Europe, and if the Euribor doesn't increase, my effective rate of interest would be 7% flat till the variable rate doesn't change. So I think it's very interesting to, you know, really consider geographies into this as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, you know, that is a really good point about the markets being different. And also, yeah, just candidates going to Europe versus the US. Do the terms of like payback, are they similar? Do people get a breather while they're in school with the loans that you guys provide, and then they pay back starting at a certain point after they've graduated?
Yes, they do get a breather of 6 months of grace after their classes end, and they are not under any obligation to make any payment towards their study and grace period. To be precise, not even a single dollar from the time that they start the application, they finish business school and 6 months of grace. And it's only then when their monthly installments, so their payments, come into play.
Okay, great. Makes sense. Nikhil, I just want to turn to you with another kind of hypothetical, but let's imagine that I'm a student and I borrowed $100,000 to join the class of 2022 at a top school. Like, how much might I be paying back per month once that grace period ends? So I've graduated, I've got my nice job, I'm 6 months out, and I get that first bill. Any like idea of like what is the ballpark on what people should be thinking about spending per month on loan repayment?
Yeah, so there's some good calculators out there that are really helpful in answering this question quite precisely. But I can take an estimate over here, where if you have an interest rate of around 5%, and you've selected to, you know, paid back over a period of 10 years, you're likely going to pay just north of $1,000 each month towards paying down that loan.
Okay. Yeah, that's helpful. And I do recognize it's kind of an unfair question because everyone borrows a different amount, the interest rates fluctuate, and obviously the time in which they're going to pay it back is a variable too. So, but that's helpful. I just sometimes wonder whether, you know, folks heading off to business school, when they're in the thick of applying and writing essays, are really thinking about, okay, this is what it is going to cost. And it's really important for them to think about it, not only because, you know, right now is the time they're, you know, arranging loans and everything, but also because I feel like sometimes I hear candidates talking about making a decision about where to attend based on like scholarship dollars or cost of living. And sometimes I feel like they're not recognizing some of the basics around, you know, ROI with respect to like, it's okay to borrow some money, especially, you know, sometimes there are folks saying, I'm going to be an investment banker, and they're, you know, weighing a like $10,000 scholarship difference between two schools. And I want to say, you know what, that's probably not the biggest factor here, you know, given your career plan. And so anyway, really helpful. Pritish, what are some of the unique challenges faced by those studying outside of their home country? And, you know, what's the solution that you all have developed? I mean, my understanding is that that's why Prodigy kind of came into existence, but I'd love to hear your take on like, what is the problem for internationals and getting student loans?
Absolutely. And I think this is something that I really enjoy. So if I had to, you know, classify it into three quick points, I think the first one is, for an international student, local loan institutions do not always oblige when lending to them. right? Because their model is not enforceable. So they really need collateral and cosigner. And that can kind of become really burdening for their family and relatives. So a lot of these students, you know, really look at the loan amount and it's a huge one and it becomes a concern. And that's how Prodigy Finance came into existence in 2007. We really eliminated the need to have a collateral or cosigner. And we just do this by the merit of the student attending a top business school. And our unique credit model allows us to do so. So I think that is one of the biggest solutions for all of our customers around the world in the past decade that's really, you know, helped them attend business school per se. The second one is we work with all schools directly, right? So the entire disbursement process, how easy it is to actually get the funds over to them. And it really helps the student focus on the core and curriculum of actually being in business school. Besides, instead of worrying about things such as, you know, conversion, how am I going to get the money over? Where am I going to get the living expenses from? So all of this is actually built into the process. So we deal with the school directly and the school's aware about the number of students coming from Prodigy Finance, and the tuition gets accredited over there and the university transfers the living expenses directly to the student's account. So it's a really easy process and it happens all on the back end. And the third point is, as you know, the student journey or just moving to a new country can be an overwhelming experience. Over the past few years, you know, we have had options in such as housing, helping students really, you know, find good accommodation. We have had partners with few telecom industry players and few airlines to, you know, subsidize their costs. And we really plan to, you know, expand these services for our customers in the future as well. So when you couple all these three things together, we are trying to do a bit more than just loans. And we look forward to see how things unfold.
Excellent. Okay. So yeah, that sounds like a good, you know, clearly that is the number one thing, as I even recall from my days getting an MBA, that yeah, for international students, it's not always so easy, you know, to go to a new country and borrow money without a cosigner. So Prodigy seems to be filling that that space really well. Nikhil, tell us a little bit about how leverage works, because I, you know, you guys have a really interesting model as well, and I feel like anyone listening, you know, should pay close attention here. So give us the story on what is it that you guys do and how does it work?
Yeah, it's a fairly simple model. It's basically group buying for student loans. So as students get admitted, they come to our website, they sign up, and they are letting us know, hey, in fall 2020, I'm going to need to borrow $65,000 and I'm going to XYZ business school. What we do is we take all the students' information at this point. You know, last year we helped 10% of all full-time MBAs. This year that number is easily going to double. And we take all of this information, completely anonymize it, and go to every lender and say, hey, what rates are you willing to offer these students? And they get back to us, we analyze all the information they submit and figure out who's offering the lowest rates. Once we figure that out, we simply make that announcement to all the students, and then the students can go to that lender and take the loans. Usually there's an exclusive offering that the lender makes for just for being a leverage member. And that's something like, hey, your interest rate will be X percent lower if you you are a leverage member. The best part is it's completely free for students to sign up. There's no charges at any point that leverage charges. And there's no commitment to take the loan that we negotiate. You can sort of look at it and decide, hey, is this really the best thing? And based on how we go about it, it usually is.
Excellent. Yeah. And I think, I mean, both of your organizations, you know, Prodigy Finance and Leverage, seem to have filled a really great void, you know, in the sense of, in the case of Leverage, gathering together all these admitted MBA students and going to lenders and saying, hey, what's the best thing rate you can give us? And then obviously for Prodigy, just, you know, I know that it used to be the case that there were some schools that would do loans for internationals, like internal loans, they would partner with a bank and make loans available. But that seems to have gone the way of the dodo back in the financial crisis of 2008. So it really, both of your entities seem like they're filling really great needs in the marketplace. I guess, Pritish, I want to ask you a question about what do you see happening with the student loan market because of the COVID-19 outbreak? Like, is there anything, is it going to be business as usual? Do you think there are changes afoot because of this, or what are you seeing right now?
I think, you know, just coming out of this last month and a half, and meeting a lot of students and talking to thousands of potential customers, I think the situation is very fluid, right? It's pretty much changing every day, not only in the country of study, but even in their home country. And I think that's an important facet to account for. So since the situation is very fluid, I think schools are still evaluating how this pans out to them. Some schools have actually gone ahead and, you know, kind of put a declaration that they're going to put a few semesters online, which is what we call a hybrid semester or a hybrid program, a couple of months online, and then they get to go campus. Whereas a few of those schools who have done this have even gone ahead and said that they're going to be decreasing the cost of attendance. So I would say, in my personal opinion, and how much I've spoken to students across all disciplines planning to do their masters, is select a school, right? Because you already have your admits before the pandemic outbreak happened. Two is secure your funding from a lender that's probably giving you a commitment-free offer, someone like Prodigy Finance. So whatever the case might be, in the next few months, you at least have your action plan set in stone. And let's say worst case scenario, if it doesn't happen this year and you plan to defer, you have nothing to lose, at least in terms of your finances, and you could always reach out back to the school and, you know, reapply or defer your admission. So I would say just stay alert and see how the situation pans out over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, that sounds like good advice. I agree. It's really fluid. But you're saying kind of get things in place, just make sure you're not bound to them, and then keep an eye on everything. And hopefully schools start to, you know, get back in session in person sometime in the fall. Nikhil, what about on your end? I mean, you're actually at HBS right now. The program went online like every other school in America for the spring semester. But how is all this kind of uncertainty maybe impacting the US market?
Yeah, I think I've had conversations with probably 24 students over the last week, trying to ascertain, you know, what are expectations moving forward and how different schools are responding to the COVID situation. And generally, I would agree with Pritish over here that it's a very case-by-case basis. Students are very much in a limbo at this point, so flexibility is going to be key. Obviously, international students have more of a challenge than domestic students, but still in a very, very similar vein. Some of the things students are weighing is, you know, is a full-time MBA without that first semester or the second semester being in person still worth it? And they're weighing things like, hey, am I still going to be able to make those deep, meaningful connections? Am I still going to, you know, develop the relationships with professors or anyone else they seek to develop? There is confidence that the academic learning will still come through virtually, but there are doubts around that. In terms of student loans, I think there is, students need to keep an eye on the tuition due dates, perhaps moving with new admission rounds coming out, things like that. In addition to that, interest rate environment due to COVID is moving in the right direction for students. So students should generally expect, compared to their peers in prior years, to have lower interest rates on their student loans. The cycle for getting a student loan can be pretty quick. So, students can retain flexibility over there in adjusting the timing in which they apply, as well as, similar to what Pritish said, making sure that the lender doesn't lock them into anything and they can, cancel if they decide to defer admission, which should be possible across most domestic lenders.
Okay, good advice. I guess I want to stick with you for one second because you just hit on a topic that is related to this next question, which is, do you have any advice for someone who's on the fence about going off to business school? And you know, whether it's because of COVID-19 or maybe just because of the cost to attend, you know, I know that a lot of candidates often grapple with this, you know, it's an expensive proposition to get an MBA. My view is that if they make it this far into the process with an offer in hand, they probably should have figured out whether they want to pay for it up front. But if someone is on the fence, whether it's because of the outbreak or just because of the sticker price in an uncertain environment, like what kind of advice do you have on that front?
Got it. I think I'll address the COVID situation first. I think over there's sort of a personal reflection that someone needs to do before deciding whether they want to attend or not. The schools are going to do their best to ensure that you have a full experience of what they intend for you to have in a non-COVID year. That being said, it's obviously difficult if the situation pushes into an environment where it's going to be virtual for the first semester. So the risk tolerance of that is the first question someone needs to ask themselves. And then the second, perhaps more important question they need to ask themselves is, what are they going to business school for? If they are going to business school for building those lasting relationships and they feel challenged that they would not be able to build those relationships in an environment that is more virtual, then maybe it makes sense to defer for a year if the school is offering that option. If there are a lot of other reasons, for example, a career change, I think that is still doable in a completely virtual environment. So then, if that's the goal of the applicant going to business school, then maybe there's not, you know, there's still some consideration they should give, but maybe there's not as strong a reason to choose to defer or delay their admission. In terms of the cost to attend, I was quite skeptical when I joined business school. You mentioned it, but the time I started thinking about the cost was actually after I got admitted, oddly enough. And today, you know, sitting right near graduation, I have no doubts it was the right decision. For context, even more extremely, I turned down, you know, a larger scholarship package when choosing to go to HBS over a different business school. And once again, I have no doubts that I made the right decision. Again, a very personal decision for each person to make. But I think if you are approaching this with the mindset of, hey, I'm ambitious and this is going to be the platform I can use to pursue my ambition, or hey, I want to do a career change, you know, there's a few better ways to do it than going to business school, despite the high cost of attendance.
Well said. Yeah, I agree. As an MBA grad, I think the last thing I think about now, many years down the road, is what it cost. I really think about all the friendships I made and the learnings that have just, you know, helped me to do everything I've done with my career. So, Pritish, any thoughts you have on this topic about just, you know, advice you have for people who might be on the fence about going off to business school because of the cost or you know, maybe because of the current environment? But yeah, any thoughts you have on that?
Sure, Graham. I think Nikhil did capture a lot of that quite beautifully. But, you know, having just worked in the space for close to 7 years on both sides of the table, right? One is on the admission side of things, and now is on the other side where students are actually applying to schools and how Prodigy has been supporting them. My closing thoughts or on this one would be is that if you ever find yourself on the fence, right, there are institutions out there in order to, you know, fund you in terms of the cost to attend, whether it's Prodigy or whether it's someone, and they would do it solely on the merit of just empowering you based on your own achievement. There used to be a time almost a decade ago where you wouldn't be able to, you know, get a cosigner free loan or a collateral fee loan. And the only prerequisite to a loan per se was your admit letter. Needless to say that those times have changed. We are onwards to the trend of 2020 and beyond. So these options are open. And you do know that an MBA can really propel your career. So if you do have that dream admit, don't let funding hold you back, because the master's is a once in a lifetime opportunity.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think it is true that like a decade ago, people didn't have the options that they have now in terms of just being able to go. Like, they might have an acceptance letter in hand and find out that, you know, no cosigner, if, you know, internationals could not get a loan in some cases. So that's a really good point. And I think it, you know, helps to kind of close out on that optimistic point where, you know, yeah, people have the ability, as we discussed at the outset of the show, there are many ways to fund. And when it comes to borrowing and student loans, there are a lot of different ways to do that as well. And, you know, whether you're international or domestic. So really great advice, guys. I appreciate you both making time to join us on the podcast. I did want to mention for those listening that if you want to know more about either of these companies, Leverage, you can find at leverage.org. So they have a, you know, you can sign up, as Nikhil said, you just sign up once you've got an offer of admission, I guess, and you can, you'll just find out. And there's no kind of obligation there. They'll let you know what the loan rate that they have, that they've negotiated. And so kind of a no-brainer. Prodigy Finance, you can find those guys over at prodigyfinance.com. And again, you know, if you're attending school out of country and looking for a loan, obviously Prodigy's the place to go. So yeah, thank to you both for making time. Really appreciate it. Yeah, you're both welcome back anytime that we have these questions, because I am, as I said at the top of the show, not an expert on financing. So Nikhil, thank you so much. Pritish, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Graham. Great being here.
All right, so stay tuned, everyone. We'll have more episodes of the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast coming your way very soon. And be safe and healthy, everyone.